Okay, let's make a start. Welcome. Thank you for joining us for our latest Employment Law 101 session. For those of you that don't know me, my name is Peter. I'm a partner with Specialist Employment Law and Business Immigration Practice, MPM Legal. We are based in the south of England, but we work with businesses that are all over the world. They have a common interest, which is employing people here in the UK, and that's where we help them. Delighted to be joined by my colleague, Charlie, today. Good morning, Charlie.
Hi Peter, how are you doing?
Yeah, not too bad at all. Thank you. Just yeah, enjoying this absolutely beautiful sunshine and blue sky we've got in Oxfordshire at the moment.
It's very lovely.
It's nice, isn't it? Well, enjoying it from the comfort of my desk anyway. I look out the window at it. Thanks to everyone that's joining live today. Just a couple of housekeeping points in terms of the live session. We absolutely welcome questions and answers on this topic today. So if you've got any questions, feel free to stick them in the Q&A bar down at the bottom. That just helps us manage them. But as I said at the start, I've opened up the chat. So I know some of you just pop questions for other people to see within the chat function. So pretty relaxed about that as well. Whatever works for you. This session is being recorded, so you'll be able to get our recording on the MPM Legal website later. You can also find us on Spotify and Amazon and other good podcast places. Also, we've got quite a few different episodes up there from 2026 already. So if you haven't checked those out already, please do so. You just need to search for Employment Law 101. Oh, have I got a bit of an echo on my? Have I got an echo, Charlie, on my audio?
I can't hear an echo.
Okay, sorry, bear with. I'm not sure what I can do about that, but I'll try and fix something. Okay, what are we talking about in today's session? Well, we're looking at some of the statistics that have come out from the Employment Tribunal service. So the reported headlines in terms of the claim numbers that are going on at the moment, which have really, really spiked. And also just a report back from one of the Employment Tribunal user groups. But it kind of feeds in to what we see in terms of the litigation process that we deal with day to day. So at any one time, we're probably involved in 40, 50 bits of litigation as a practice. And all of that is on the business side of things. So a lot of very, very good experience in terms of litigation. And we've been doing it for years and years. So we've kind of been very attuned to, the highs and lows of dealing with the employment tribunal system. In terms of what's going on, it's quite interesting in terms of the data, and we're constantly being asked by clients, understandably, about backlogs in the system, when their cases are going to be heard, and what to do in the meantime. So that's what we want to talk about today, just to give you a bit of an insight in terms of what we're seeing, what's going on, and how we have some tips for just making your life a little bit easier, really. Charlie.
Yeah, it's a really interesting and challenging topic. And the figures from the Ministry of Justice really highlight how much is happening behind the scenes in employment tribunals.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's dig into those numbers first of all. So between October and December 2025, which is the most recent set of figures we've got, new single claims in employment tribunals jumped, and are you ready for this number? 54% compared with the same quarter in 2024. So that is a heck of an increase. And we're talking about individual single claims as well. So we're not talking about, bulk action where we're looking at things like equal pay claims and the like. These are single claims up 54% when you compare the same quarter 2024 with October to December 2025. The tribunal's open caseload is up by 49%. So, as good as a 50% increase. These are big numbers. I mean, you don't need me to tell you that these are big, big increases. And when you dig into the types of claims that are actually coming into the system, things get a little bit more interesting. Open track claims now make up 60% of all received claims. And Charlie, you're going to talk, I think, a bit about what open track claims are. But disability discrimination is the most common. And that probably will chime for those of you that are kind of on the front line of HR practice. It probably will chime with the sort of employee relations issues that you're getting stuck into day in, day out, and what employees are bringing. Now, to put these numbers into perspective, between March 24 and March 25, tribunals received 42,000 single claims, and they disposed of 32,000 of those. Now, that's left 45,000 claims that are still outstanding. So you can see why you're getting these really long waiting times that we're experiencing, right, Charlie?
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, those waiting times aren't evenly spread. For example, a medium length hearing, say 3 to 5 days in most regions, you could be looking at the first or second half of 2026 before you have that hearing. But in London South, it could be the second half of 2027. That's 2 years away, which is absolutely incredible. And it's not just volume, it's the complexity of the cases that's increased too. And judges are seeing more complicated claims, especially with the rise of AI. Though,
Yeah.
Peter, I would love to get your thoughts on if you think AI is having an impact on employment matters before we even get to the tribunal.
Yeah, absolutely. Before I answer that, I saw a post on LinkedIn this morning, I think, where somebody had a listing for 2029,
Oh,
so
wow.
3 years away, which yeah, though I mean last year in 2025 we had a listing for 2028, I think, didn't we? We were talking about in the
Yeah,
office.
I think we
So
did have a couple.
another three-year one. AI, I mean, I think actually, we could do a whole dedicated
Yeah.
separate session on AI. We've done 101s in the past on the impact of AI in the workplace generally. We did one about 18 months ago, I think. And if you go and look in our back catalogue, you'll be able to find that episode. It's still worth listening to. However, I think it's fair to say that we're seeing a lot more AI, right? Really, obviously, AI generated documentation and issues coming out of it. So, aside from the whole debate around how much should you empower or disempower employees to use AI in their day-to-day work and intellectual property considerations around that and confidentiality considerations and concerns about employees putting all of your secret info into a large language learning model. Aside from those sorts of things, in terms of frontline contentious type HR and employment law work, it's getting quite severe, I think, in terms of the impact. So we're seeing very, very long grievances. So an issue where there might have been a grievance that was on a page or a page and a half's worth of email or document is kind of spun up into 3, 4, 5 pages. And I think it just really, really adds to the pressures that everybody's under. You're trying to do the day-to-day job, you're trying to run a business, you're trying to focus on strategy, you're trying to focus on maybe learning and development stuff, initiatives that are really, really positive. And it's very, very easy, I think, to get bogged down in just the weight of information that you're expected to actually wade through. I don't know what the attendees today are sort of experiencing in terms of AI. So, by all means, put something in the chat. But what sort of stuff are you seeing, Charlie, on that?
I mean, I see, as you say, grievances, but with AI, it seems to take it and go and find absolutely every single type of claim it could possibly be and then put that into the grievance. And I think, yeah, as you say, it's just making things much more complex and difficult to handle, really. And a lot of the time you'll see you'll give an answer to the questions and your answer will then be put into AI and you'll have a response to that from AI. And it just tends to ask the same questions over and over again.
Yeah, there's a repetitive nature to it, and I've certainly experienced looking at a document and thinking, "Crikey, this looks massive! Like, what on earth are we going to be able to do with this?" And you get like a page and a half in, and you realise it's just starting to repeat itself. It's just the same stuff. So it becomes less of a legal issue then, and it's more of a practical issue in terms of how do we actually get through what we need to get through. Oh, I could just see Elizabeth comment. Hey, Elizabeth, hope you're well. Hello, I've had a 78-page grievance, and AI helped me summarize, but a lot of the grievance was pointless. Yeah, so ironically, you can use AI yourself to try and digest what the AI-generated grievance is actually saying, but 78 pages is a bit of a whopper, isn't it? Mike saying employees used to use it all the time. They do not know half the time what it means. It can be a nightmare. I think that's true. I mean, I'm. There is an aspect of me that thinks the scope for AI is really democratizing, if that's the word. It's kind of like leveling the playing field in a way in terms of giving employees an easier awareness of what their rights might be. And if you think the same, Charlie, in terms of it used to be hard to get hold of information, and now you can go to ChatGPT and say, "Here's what I'm actually experiencing at work. What does this actually mean?" And ChatGPT will frame it in more legalistic terms, right?
I think that's what I was getting at when I said we'll see lots of different claims being put into grievances because it will sort of take anything that you say and try and find something that matches it. And as you say, Mike, they don't necessarily know what it means at that stage.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, Terry, hi. Hope you're keeping well, Terry. Terry's saying AI's replaced my mate down the pub. That's right. Like we used to get that with settlement agreements, where somebody would be going, "Well, my friend, I've spoken to a barrister who drinks in my local, and he's told me that I shouldn't sign this particular provision," and without any context whatsoever. And I guess if you're feeding stuff into ChatGPT or similar, it's only going to be telling you information based on the information you're giving it in the first place. So it's that old adage, garbage in, garbage out, and you've got to take some of it with a pinch of salt. It sounds like there's a lot of interest on that topic, actually. I think we've got a lot of stuff we could talk about there, Charlie. So maybe
Yeah,
we put
that's
a pin in that for a future 101 session. Let's just bring it back to AI and employment tribunals then. So we know this is kind of an increasingly modern challenge. We weren't looking at this as an issue a couple of years ago, even. And what we're seeing is unrepresented parties. And I think a lot of the claims we're involved in are actually what we call litigants in person. So people who are not legally represented. They now have AI tools to draft claims and responses. Now, on the one hand, and this is the benefit of AI, I think, it is helping people to articulate their issues in a way. If it's done really, really well, it can be done concisely. But what we know from the tribunal user group minutes and what employment judges are reporting is that lots of claims are overly complex. They have really long schedules of loss. They have certain applications being made during the proceedings that we wouldn't ordinarily expect to see. And that is adding time and cost for everybody. Time and cost for the tribunal in dealing with it, time and cost for respondent parties to deal with those things as well. So it's almost like AI's made the claims more detailed than they actually need to be. But with that added complexity, of course, you've got more work per case, and that's just adding to this backlog that we're experiencing.
Yeah, definitely. And we also have the Employment Rights Act 2025, which is introducing new rights of action. So the pressure on the system is only expected to increase. There's going to be more types of claim, more protections, and more people potentially taking action. So it's definitely a perfect storm. And just to give it a bit more colour, let's break down what open track claims actually include that Peter mentioned earlier. They're mostly discrimination and whistleblowing claims, but within that, disability discrimination is the most common, as Peter said. And those cases often require adjustments, so extra time for hearings or documents in accessible formats, and those can slow proceedings down as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the thing is, we had a claim recently where someone's asking the tribunal to bring forward their hearing date as a means of an adjustment, also, almost. The tribunal basically had short shrift with that and said, "Well, you're in the same boat as hundreds, if not thousands, of other claimants, so we can't make an exception for you." Yeah, I mean, it does slow down proceedings. I'll just jump in and answer a question, a good question we've had on that. So Anonymous has asked, are there fines or penalties for those bringing long or complicated claims which have no legal standing? Well, the answer to that is there are tools that you can use as a respondent and that the tribunal's got at its disposal if the proceedings are being conducted in a way which is, I mean, let's use the term unreasonable, not as a legal construct, but just generally. So if a party, and it applies to both parties, are acting unreasonably in terms of the conduct of the case, then it is open for the other party to ask for certain orders in terms of preventing the defence being run. Costs awards could be made. But what I'd say about that is it is quite a high threshold, I think, in terms of being able to persuade a tribunal that someone is acting unreasonably. It is, it's quite a high threshold in terms of unreasonable behaviour to get to that point. Now, I think it's an interesting question because actually, is this something that the tribunals need to reconsider in terms of the rules, right? You can see the scope for them tightening up the rules and it actually, in an effort to sort of reshape things. So, can they flex their muscles a little bit more, maybe in terms of exercising the existing rules framework? But yeah, I mean, if you're unlucky enough to be involved in a case where the other side's acting really unreasonable, speak to your lawyers about what applications can be made, what tools have we got? Let's just talk a little bit about whistleblowing, because we're seeing whistleblowing claims through the system. They're notoriously complex claims because they often involve multiple layers of evidence as well. So emails, internal reports, sometimes protected conversations are relied on, and all of that takes time to kind of gather and unpick. So the nature and the complexity of the claims, and this is your point, Charlie, I think, about these open track claims, they now make up more of the tribunal claims we see
Yeah,
than the simple claims. So it's
definitely.
less about Wages Act claims for unpaid wages, wrongful dismissal claims for unpaid notice pay, or what we call ordinary, so Section 98, unfair dismissal claims, right? And it's more about disability discrimination, reasonable adjustments, whistleblowing, victimization as well. The other factor I think I wanted to mention is just about ACAS early conciliation. And those of you that have kind of got your finger on the pulse in terms of the early conciliation process will know that that has been doubled to 12 weeks, I think, from 6 weeks. So ACAS early conciliation is like an important part of the process. It's the pre-step before you actually issue your claim. Most claims require it, not all. ACAS will provide you with a certificate number. You use that on the ET1 claim form to bring the claim. Now, I think the government's logic is in extending that early conciliation period, it's basically going to mean that there's more time to try and mediate and get a settlement agreed to take claims out of the system. The data from ACAS is interesting. Claims for, requests for early conciliation have increased 26% year on year, which again, like, I think it's really difficult for the ACAS conciliators to be keeping on top of this extra workload, right?
Yeah, no, definitely. And in
So,
respect to,
yeah,
sorry,
no, go ahead, go ahead.
I was just going to say, where the timeline has doubled from 6 to 12 weeks for the early conciliation period, it's still really important to engage early in that, even though you have more time. Resolving disputes can take longer than expected, so need to be realistic about that. And if you're not prepared, that extra time can feel like a really long and stressful wait as well.
Absolutely. It's I think it's mixed experiences in terms of early conciliation. When it works well, it works really well. And but my experience of it has it's kind of increasingly felt like a tick box exercise. I don't know kind of your experience with it, Charlie, but sometimes it feels like you're just going through the motions. So you get to a point where a certificate is issued, parties get the number, claimant can go ahead and bring the claim, which everyone's waiting for. So yeah, let's see how that shakes out when we get the next set of numbers next year. Let's talk about solutions a little bit then. So we've kind of outlined a bit about what we're seeing in the tribunals and the fact that it's not exactly a pretty picture. What can businesses do to kind of prepare and put themselves in a good spot given everything that's going on with AI complexity, long waiting times, and just more litigation?
Well, it's sort of following on from what you just said about ACAS feels like a tick box exercise, but it's actually really important to take it seriously because if you engage with ACAS as soon as a potential claim arises, it can save time, reduce costs, and sometimes avoid a full tribunal entirely if you can settle that matter early.
I mean, we have lots of discussions with people where they want to fight on principle. We say that's great, have a fight on principle, but it will cost you money to have that fight. And sometimes it is the right call to make. I mean, particularly where you think somebody is a kind of lead claimant almost, and there are other people waiting in the wings to see how that claim goes and whether or not the company puts up a fight. And if you have good prospects of defending the claim and you want to make that point to send a message so other people don't see it as an opportunity for a handout, absolutely, it can be the right call. Equally, though, sometimes we do encounter this where there are just other things going on within a business, change projects, strategic stuff, commercial stuff, where the right decision, irrespective of the merits, is just to try and settle, just so you can move on and not have this distraction at all. Okay, so I think my tip about that is something on preservation of evidence. So when you get to the litigation stage and you're under a legal duty to disclose documents and information, That duty of disclosure applies to stuff that's both helpful to your case and unhelpful to your case. You can't cherry pick the stuff to disclose. But with these long delays, it follows that there's a bigger risk in terms of critical evidence being lost because, different companies have different email retention policies, electronic retention policies, but also witnesses, come and go, don't they, in terms of employment, right? So, proofing witnesses and going to see witnesses and taking their information early, even if it's just a skeleton statement to get something down, will help you. But at an early stage, when you think you know what the issue is, just preserving evidence that you may need to disclose later will also help you as well. And I mean, we know having the documents is a massive part of being able to successfully defend a claim, right, Charlie?
But also, it's not just about having the documents. It's about being able to organize them clearly and being able to explain to the tribunal your side of the story. If a claim is really complex, like one that's been drafted by AI, then you need to be able to present your side in a way that's structured and easy to follow for the tribunal, because that can influence how efficiently they're actually able to deal with your claim.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think we know from witness statements and we know from our experience that it's much more powerful for a witness to say, I did this thing, I made this decision because, and here's the document in the bundle that documents my thought process at the time that you can take the judge to and they can read it for themselves. And it might be a document that was created 2 years previously, but it speaks for itself. Versus a witness evidence being, well, I made this decision because dot dot dot, and there's no supporting evidence that goes with it. I'm not saying, like in the second example, the witness is going to be disbelieved or not be credible at all, but it just makes the tribunal's job a lot easier to sustain a finding on something when they've got actual documented evidence from the time,
Yeah,
contemporaneous
definitely.
evidence from the time that they can point to. So I mean, something else we would, of course, recommend. You say we've got a vested interest in recommending this, and that's taking legal advice at an early point. And the amount of times that, well, previously, I'd like to think we've got a very good kind of educated set of clients now that like to contact us early because they know. But, I have encountered over the years that phone call where it's, we've done this, like, and it's kind of like, we're just letting you know, we've fired this person. We can't unfire this person now, really, once that gene is out of the bottle. And likewise, we've had it before where people will come and say, we've just submitted the defense to the tribunal, can you now help us prepare for? And you think, well, we really would like to have a hand in or just help you with the defense, because once you go through these milestones, there are certain decisions you just can't undo, and you're kind of stuck with them. So of course, you'd expect me to say, get that legal advice, get it a bit early. Even if a claim seems minor, getting that guidance can just help you navigate. And as we've said, with these, AI-driven complexities that we're seeing, you've got to make sure that your response and your entire strategy and approach actually is really, really up to scratch. So plan for that complexity, anticipate the evidence that you need, and really get down what your version of events is going to be quite early.
So make sure that you are engaging in early conciliation, keep all of that documentation thorough and organized, seek that advice, and plan for complexity, especially with AI drafted claims.
Definitely, definitely wise words. We're going to be r wrapping up in a second. Thanks for the contributions that we've had. Let me just answer a couple of the questions that we've had before we conclude for today. Just a reminder, you can get our recordings on the NPM Legal website, the video recording, and all the audio recordings are available for free. Amazon, Spotify, and Apple, I think. Just need to search for Employment Law 101. Mike asks, do you think that the FWA will affect the rights of claims? So this is a Fair Work agency, which is coming online really soon. What I think about that is, I think if it works as it's intended, what it will probably do is encourage greater compliance at a company level, which I think will filter through to individuals then not having to bring complaints against a business, because the company's got it right. Now, whether the company gets it right, you'd expect under its own initiative. Unfortunately, not every employer is like that. Whether it's mandated and been subject to, some kind of regulatory intervention by the Fair Work Agency, The whole idea is to really rebalance employment rights in favor of employees, and FWA is an integral part of that. So they're going to have a, a whip hand in terms of what they can force businesses to do. So I think it probably, if it works as intended, it ought to filter through into fewer claims, but it's not going to be a quick fix for sure. We're not going to see an immediate reduction in the numbers anytime soon, I would hazard a guess at. I don't know if you've got any thoughts on that, Charlie, at all, but that's what I think.
I would agree with you.
And just a couple of other comments. Maria saying Acast so behind, a client of mine got a first call from the day before the conciliation period ended, so it ended up as a heads up. Yeah, we've experienced that as
Yeah,
well,
definitely.
Maria, actually, and that's what I mean, I think, about Acast being really, really overloaded in terms of work themselves. No criticism of Acast at all, but I know from speaking to some conciliators that they just have a lot of pre-claim work to get through. So yeah, difficult situation. Elaine said, I'm certain that in an ET I was involved in, the amount of wording we were required to use was limited to a certain number of words. Does this still apply? Have you encountered that, Charlie?
I have encountered it. I don't, it's not with every case, but it is with certain, with some cases. But I haven't noticed that there's necessarily a rhyme or reason. Have you?
I think Bristol Employment Tribunal take an approach
Right,
where
okay.
they will cap hearing bundles at a certain number of pages, maybe like
Yeah.
200, 250 pages, and the parties have to make an application if they want to exceed that. And yeah, certainly I've encountered quite a few times limits on witness statements. So each witness
Yeah.
statement limited to, say,
Yeah.
1500 words, which is probably the same thing you've seen, Charlie, as well. I haven't seen it more widespread at other tribunals, though. I think
No.
I think I've only really encountered it in Bristol, actually. So yeah, I
Yeah.
mean, that's an example where some regional tribunals will kind of have their own particular approach with things.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Colin is using AI, not ironically, in terms of this session. It looks like he's generated a summary for other people to see. So thanks very much for that, Colin. Right. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. We will be back in a couple of weeks' time with another topic. I know a couple of you emailed me with topic suggestions, so thank you very much for those. We do get them and we do listen. If you've got any other topic suggestions for the future, then please do drop me an email, peter@npmlegal.co.uk. In the meantime, thanks for all the questions and contributions today, and we hope you have a fantastic rest of this week. Make the most of the sunshine.
Yeah, definitely.
Thanks,
Thank you.
everybody.
All
Bye-bye.
right. Bye.